one of the reasons I identified this as a social issue that really agitated and made me angry and upset and want to see some change is because my biological father has been in and out of jail and prison my entire life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Yes to Youth podcast presented by Let's Care in collaboration with LearnServe International. I'm your host, Matt Scott, the founder and host of Let's Care, where I've interviewed 100 plus changemakers to date, and also, even before starting Let's Care, a volunteer with LearnServe, where since 2015, I've been a mentor, a mentor coordinator, a growth council member, and just a community member who's loved being part of an organization which believes in the power of young people to create change. This episode is the last episode in our series, but over the course of this series, we heard from Emma Strother, we heard from Mary Sun, Quentin Horton, Charlotte Rose Lamott, Xavier Rivera Lanza. And now in this episode, we're hearing from none other than Yasmin Arrington, who created a little organization called Scholarchips while a student in LearnServe, and to this day continues to run and bring scholarships into the world. She'll tell you all about it in this interview, and I'm so excited for you to hear it and thankful for you for tuning in. If you haven't already, definitely take this time to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Please give us 5 stars, leave a review with what you think, and you'll still have the chance to leave a voicemail if you'd like to share your own thoughts and perspective, potentially on this podcast in the future. Thanks for being part of this journey, and now it's time for Yasmin.
My name is Yasmin Arrington. I am a DC native. I was born and raised in Washington, DC. I am a proud product of DC public schools. Mm-hmm. I am the founder and executive director of Scholarchips Inc., which is a DC-based 501c3 charitable foundation that provides college scholarships, mentoring, and a support network to children who have incarcerated parents, inspiring them to complete their college education. As of April 2021, Scholarchips has awarded over $280,000 in college scholarships to 71 scholars, now with 22 college graduates and 7 scholars who are set to graduate this spring. I obtained my Bachelor of Arts in Strategic Communications and History from Elon University in 2015. Mm-hmm. And I earned my Master of Divinity degree from Howard University School of Divinity in 2018.
Oh my gosh, there's so much to your story that we could dive into, but I want to start out by asking a question that I know you've heard many, many times through LearnServe. And that question is, what pisses you off? What pisses you off now, but also what pissed you off when you were in LearnServe?
Absolutely. My goodness, that could be a whole show in and of itself, Matt. but yes, I really love that question that LearnServe asks fellows. It really helped to lead me to the work that I'm doing now. So when I was a fellow at LearnServe in 2010, I began to think about where I was in life at the time. You know, and Scott Reckler was my cohort leader at the time, and he challenged us to look into our communities, you know, our family lives, our schools, our everyday lives, and identify an issue that pisses us off, you know, what makes us angry, what makes us want to see some change. And so ultimately for me, on a macro level, what I identify that pisses me off is the prison industrial complex and mass incarceration. And those are, you know, very macro level, you know, terms that we use to talk about the negative effects of the carceral system or the prison system on those who are incarcerated, children of incarcerated parents and families, which in some terms, some researchers have called us the collateral damage. And so, but I narrowed down my focus to the effects of parental incarceration on children and families. And one of the reasons I identified this as a social issue that really agitated and made me angry and upset and want to see some change is because my biological father has been in and out of jail and prison my entire life. And when I was a junior, while I was a fellow in LearnServe, I was also a junior in high school. And at the time, my maternal grandmother, who was my primary caregiver, she essentially raised me and my two younger brothers. The two of us were researching scholarships online that I could apply for my senior year so that I could afford the cost of attending a college or university. And my grandmother made a very interesting observation. One evening we were sitting down in the dining room and she turned around and looked at me and said, "You know, Yasmin, there's so many scholarships out here, so many creative scholarships, but I don't see any for children with incarcerated parents." And that was a very insightful observation, and it was sort of an aha moment. And so I took that back to LearnServe, and I really just kind of honed in on that and developed, you know, I asked Scott, do you think I could propose a scholarship and or mentorship program for children who have incarcerated parents like myself? And he said, "Well, absolutely. You know, just do your research and, you know, figure out what your target population is, the demographic you're going to serve, research the root causes of the issue, you know, how your demographic is affected by the issue, and what is it that you are going to provide? How are you going to differentiate and separate your organization from all the other hundreds of thousands of scholarship and mentorship programs out there?"
Right.
So that's exactly what I did. And then in terms of what pisses me off now, there are so many things. You know, one of the biggest things for me is like just looking at the United States of America and all of the various institutions and systems that we have. Usually in the background of these systems and institutions is a foundation of racism, is a foundation of a caste system, even though we don't really use that terminology anymore.
Right.
You know, like during slavery, you know, from the very moment, I think it was 1619, when the first Africans, at least that are that we know of, publicly recorded,
exactly.
You know, there was a caste system that was institutionalized by the powers that be, by the slave owners. And so, some people don't like to talk about it. Some people are in denial about it. But I believe that 2020 was the year. And I pray that because Americans, we have a tendency to have a very short memory.
Yes.
But 2020, we do. You know, 2020 was the year in which we saw the brutal, cold-blooded murder of George Floyd by a former police officer, Derek Chauvin. And you know, now we're watching the trial day by day. We're seeing the witnesses giving their testimonies, and then in 2020, the shooting of Ahmaud Arbery, who was literally just taking a jog through a neighborhood, and Breonna Taylor, who was sleeping in her own bed, and the feds burst through her home and shot her, you know, laying in her bed. These types of things we continue to see, you know, people can no longer deny that racism exists and that it infiltrates every system and institution in the United States of America. And when I say that, what does that mean? For example, academia or the ivory tower, you know, higher education, and the lack of access that people that look like me, you know, mm-hmm. poor people, black and brown people, indigenous people, while some states have instituted some types of benefits for certain indigenous people, and like, let's say, for example, free college for foster care youth. One, a lot of those folks are unaware that those resources are available. And yeah. Two, it's the gap, like the wealth gap in this country is just ridiculous. So clearly, you know, I can go on and on and go down a rabbit yeah. hole, but, and I won't do that for the sake of time, but I you know, what pisses me off is lack of access to education, to resources, to opportunities, you know, how the, you know, the prison industrial complex and the quote unquote justice system, some people say in the injustice system, mm-hmm. how it treats people, you know, once we deem someone as a criminal or once we, you know, put someone behind bars, the rest of their life becomes a situation where they are constantly put in a box, they're forgotten about, and they're constantly reminded of the worst day of their lives or the yeah. maybe, you know, the biggest mistake of their lives. And a lot of, you know, in many instances, people ended up becoming a career criminal. Not always, but there are instances where people became career criminals or, you know, were robbing or whatever they were doing because they were living in poverty and they were trying yeah. to figure out a way to survive. We tend to make excuses like, you know, all of these mass shootings. I mean, we have seen how many mass shootings have we seen from our Caucasian brothers and sisters who you know, go into a church, you know, or go into a movie theater or a concert, or I mean anywhere yeah. really in America in civilian life, and shoot up the place, you know, and kill people. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're arrested peacefully and, you know, sometimes they get let off, you know, they're not sentenced, they're excused, or maybe they're given a slap on the wrist. But we see a lot of people of color who've been innocent and have been sentenced, extremely unjust, long sentences. Or even people who did commit crimes and they have been reformed and they are ready to be reentered into society. Many of them are still sitting in prison to this day and they are totally forgotten about. And yeah. when you write to the parole boards and to the governors, they don't want to hear anything about a pardon or clemency. It's really a sad situation in America. Yeah. And it infiltrates every institution. And so that is what pisses me off. I think yeah. we need to have more empathy and see people as people, and not lock people into labels. But the issue is that, you know, there's a certain portion, a group of people that want to hold on to power. And so, like, I guess in order to do that, you have to suppress and oppress the specific other you have to yeah. other people and suppress them in order to keep power, and I don't like those kind of power dynamics in that sense. These are the kind of things I think about every day, and as a Black woman, I have a double conscious, meaning that, you mm-hmm. know, I walk through life also always thinking about how I show up in the world and how people are receiving me, how my actions and my words, how everything, like the way I dress, the way I speak, mm-hmm. my social media, like it never goes away. I'm always thinking about how people are perceiving me. And if I were to say something wrong or to dress a certain way or to whatever, that it could totally destroy any future opportunities that I have. Mm. Some of my other colleagues don't have that issue, right. Challenge.
Exactly. And, you know, one thing that I want to ask about, because that is so powerful. And I think that, you know, there are all of these heavy intertwined issues that you touched on. And something I think about, you know, as a Black queer man, especially, is mm-hmm. that, like, you know, there are so many different weights and so many different identities and things that we carry. And,
yes.
You know, I think back, you mentioned last year with everything around the murder of George Floyd, but then everything after, all the conversations, I can't believe still that there were so many people, so many white people or non-Black people, but especially white people in particular, who said, what? I didn't know that this was going on. I've never had these conversations, which, like, to me blows my mind, because
I know,
as you just illustrated, these are things that are on our minds constantly, or, you know, depending on what that combination of identities is, especially, there are just a ton of issues on our minds. And so one thing I want to know from you is, like, from the perspective of just like the emotions, I guess, you know, it's a lot of emotional weight to carry, the weight of the world on your shoulders in some ways, to put it in dramatic terms. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how have you managed to navigate that? And honestly, you know, I don't know if there's like a right answer, because at the end of the day, it's going to be tough. Like, yeah, how have you managed to keep balanced just with all of the weight of the world? But before getting to that answer, Yasmeen, I want to tell you, yes, you, the Yes Youth podcast listeners, all about why I hope that you'll donate to Learn Serve International. And no, the Learn Serve team didn't ask me to include this. I really want to include this as a longtime community member of Learn Serves and someone who for a long time has seen the power of the work that Learn Serve does to build capacity in this new generation of leaders. If the last year has shown us anything, it's that our world has a lot of issues that we still need to address, and it's an all hands on deck effort, which means that we need everyone. We need young people. We need people of all ages to take action and to do something. And Learn Serves taking a step to invest in that future where everyone could be a change maker, everyone can make an impact, and where we could build the world that we want to see in our own ways, through our own ventures, through our own businesses, through our own nonprofits, like Yasmeen. So if you're interested in donating to Learn Serve, you could easily do that by going to learn-serve.org/donate. That's learn-serve.org/donate on the Learn Serve website, and donate through a tool powered by the incredible fundraising tool GiveButter, which has really low transaction fees to make sure that as much money as possible goes to Learn Serve and supports young people making an impact. Now, back to my conversation with Yasmeen. Like, yeah, how have you managed to keep balanced just with all of the weight of the world?
Oh, that's a really great question, Matt. I think a few things. One, I am a woman of faith. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am a professed born again believer. Right. You know, I follow the teachings of Jesus, and I believe in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And I'm mm-hmm. not afraid, even though in today's day and age, if you say that, people like fall to pieces and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you said that. Like, but
yeah.
I mean, it's just one of my identities. Like, you miss something, right. I identify with. And so, you know, I believe in spiritual warfare. I believe in the power of prayer. I believe that I have a, you know, a spirit that was given to me that can conquer all things, like conquer all evil, and that can overcome challenges and evil. And so, you know, I have scriptures in my, that I keep in my mind, that I call forth when I need some type of strength or reassurance. I have friends and family members. We pray together. We pray for each other. And also, you know, I have these conversations with some of my good girlfriends and some of the elders in my life who I respect. And sometimes, you know, even my Caucasian colleagues, you know, have these types of, now you can't really have with everybody, because you really do have to have an open mind to talk about things like racism, things like injustices, things like the prison industrial complex. And, you know, you really have to kind of walk in with an open mind, because if you walk in with a closed mind, you're already on the defense and you're not really going to learn. And so also other ways how I balance, I mean, that's the main thing is grounding myself in prayer and surrounding myself with, trying my best to surround myself with people who I genuinely believe have my best interests at heart. Now, granted, I've made plenty of mistakes, and I'm still learning, you know, I'm still learning to this very day. But it's so important to protect, you know, as Black people, as queer people, as well, you know, as these identities that we carry and who we are, we have to protect our energy and our space, you know, like have a sacred space. And that's another thing I take pride and joy in my home, like wherever I reside that I'm living. And so I make it a space that is safe, that is that has sunlight, that has, you know, maybe has some plants. It's just very peaceful, it's quiet. And so it gives me time to think. It gives me time to be myself, to play music and to just dance and to really, really just make the space my own. And I think, you know, self-care is a major thing. And that's really, that's an ongoing challenge and journey for me. And I try to put, you know, I'm trying to, as the years go on, as days go on, you know, try to make sure that I'm putting things in my body that my body needs, you know, drinking water and eating salad, you know, healthy, lean salads. And now granted, you know, I have my moments where I want mac and cheese and that's fine.
Good.
Yeah. You know, it's not the end of the world. If I have some mac and cheese or if I have a bowl of ice cream, it's really not. But anyway, I just try to practice a few different self-care or self-nurturing habits or practices. You know, sometimes I just kick my feet up and I watch a soap opera.
Yeah.
And that's my escape, because I find that if we're not careful and allow the weight of the world and all of the things to get us so down, deep down into a dark, deep abyss, or never-ending depression. Like really, if you think about it, if you get too deep, you could really become depressed or angry, and it would kind of prevent you from progressing in life. But I just try to put everything in perspective and realize that there are always going to be some type of evil or some type of forces that are working against you, especially when you're trying to do something positive. That's always going to be there. And so, you know, every day I make a choice every day. You know, I make a choice to roll up my sleeves and to do something, you know, to be a part of the solution, to be a problem solver, to be, as you said, a change maker, a change agent, and to really operate as if the world that I envision can actually become a reality. Like I have to believe it. I have to believe that one day all children of incarcerated parents and all Black and brown children will not have to worry about paying for college and having to take out, I mean, it's really an oppressive system. So you mean to tell me, you're telling me that in order to get ahead and to get a living, a good job, quote unquote, good job, right? Good job, a living wage job that's going to pay me decently so that I can go and become a homeowner and this, this, that, and the third, and really go off and live my life and be successful and start a family, blah, all those things that we all want, right? And so, okay, you know, cost of attendance, you know, averages $40,000 a year. I mean, give or take, depending on what college or university you go to. And, you know, a school, you'd be fortunate if they offer you, unless you're one of those all-stars where you get a full ride, but that's just not everybody's story. And I know one young lady right now got into Spelman College. They only were able to offer, or they only offered $3,600 in grants. The rest of it to make up like $40,000 or $50,000, whatever, were all loans. And I was like, oh my goodness. So you multiply that times 4 years, you're walking out of college with hundreds of like $100,000+ in debt. And how am I mean, it costs nearly $400,000 to buy, you know, you need a $400,000 loan to buy a home in DC almost. So how, and we're talking about, we're not even talking about a single family home. Single family homes in DC, easily a $700,000+. Yeah. Our homes are starting to get into millions of dollars. I cannot do that if I get out of school and I'm making, you know, any like maybe $35,000, $60,000, if that, on a good day. And I've got hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. And you know, the debt collectors, I mean, you got to pay that when the time comes, because you need to have a good credit score in order to be even eligible for mortgage. It's really, I mean, when you look at it, no one wants to call it what it is, but it is a terribly oppressive system that is designed for the poor to get poor and the richer to get richer. That's really what it is. And most of our money is going to the same business, the same corporations and the government. You know, it's a mess.
And thinking about it too, it's like, okay, so you have a parent who's in prison, but then because like they're not able to contribute to your college expenses, then you have to go to the government, the same system that's probably already running the or maybe it's a private prison, which is even worse. But it's like it's just a cycle of oppression. It's a cycle of being pushed down. And you know, one thing I want to just ask about, because I have a couple more questions, like one of them is, what is the, are there, you know, beyond your own story, is there a story that resonates with you about like why the work that you do with scholarships is so impactful? Because it is so clear from everything you've shared so far, and thank you, that what you do with scholarships is needed. The world needs not only that, but also a lot more change. But is there a story just from the people that you've supported with all of those grants or all of those scholarships to date that that just reminds you of the power of what you're doing?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And thank you so much, Matt, for that. I so appreciate your kind words and your encouragement. There are so many success stories, fortunately, you know, stories that come to mind, but one in particular is that of one of our alumni. His name is Durante Craig, and Durante, it brings tears to my eyes just thinking about his life and his story and how far he's come and still the challenges that he and his family face today. So how we found out about Durante was his father, Ronald Craig, who is still incarcerated, wrote to us. He found out, he did some searching on the web, and he found out about scholarships years ago. This had to be, I want to say, about 2014 or so. About 2014, I think. And he wrote to us and introduced himself, told us all about, he had never met us, he didn't know us, you know, told us about his son and that he read about scholarship, the program online. And he was just asking, you know, I'm hoping that you can, you know, take my son in, accept him as a part of your, as one of your scholars, as a part of your program, and help him to get to and through college. And we received an application from Durante, and he's so eloquent. He's eloquent in his speech. He's extremely articulate. He's extremely intelligent. He's very, you know, amicable and personable. You know, everybody who meets him, I've never heard a bad thing. Everybody who meets him loves him. And he just has this really powerful presence. Even when he was 18, he just had this presence about him. Like, you know, you just know he's a star. And so we, you know, Durante became one of our scholars, and he attended Bowie State University. And I'm gonna tell you, this young man, I don't even know if this has ever happened in the history of Bowie State University. Mm-hmm. He was Mr. Bowie State. I know they have different titles, but essentially he was Mr. Bowie State every year for 4 years. Yes. That's how much even from freshman year. And he just really blossomed and flourished. And he was growing, and he was such an active scholar. He would come to all of the events. He would serve as a speaker when we had the annual awards ceremony and we asked scholars to give reflections. He would always volunteer. He would never hesitate. He's been the MC of some of our programs. And then he graduated from Bowie State University. And then immediately after that, he went on to pursue his master's in innovation and entrepreneurship from the University of California, Irvine. Mm. And he earned his master's not too long ago. I want to say this must have been May of 2020, I believe. And Durante, you know, we still keep in touch with him, and now he lives in California, and he started his own PR firm, a marketing advertising firm. But his father, it's just such an interesting and powerful story. You know, his father thanked us for him graduating, and his father, you know, asked if scholarships, if I could, and the board chair, if we could write letters to the governor, Governor Northam of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, and the Virginia Parole Board. And we did that. This was back in June of 2020, didn't hear back. And so Durante's father was incarcerated when Durante was 1 year old, and Ronald was in his early 20s. Ronald's because Durante's in his 20s. So Ronald is now in his 40s, and he's not due for release until 2040, at which he'll be in his 60s. And then on our inaugural gala back, this was 2019, he performed an original monologue that he wrote about having an incarcerated father. And it was just so powerful. I mean, you could hear a pin drop. There were 200 plus people in that room, and you could hear a pin drop. All eyes were on him. And, you know, he came in with an orange jumpsuit, and he had handcuffs on his hands and shackles on his feet. And, you know, he basically bursted out of the suit, you know, by the end of the monologue. And he had on a 3-piece suit, you know, pinstripe suit. And he said, you know, I'm a success. I'm going to succeed. You know, this doesn't define me. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. Yeah. So anyway, I mean, he's just one of the many young people who I've had the opportunity to meet through scholarships, to help to encourage them, to help to, you know, provide scholarships and book awards, mentoring, you know, professional development, even sometimes our scholars, when they meet people at our events or we connect them with mentors, they end up getting internship opportunities, end up, you know, meeting people who can write them recommendation letters. It's all it's all, you know, the support, everything that we do is intentional, but it all benefits the scholars and alumni. So he's definitely one of the stories, that one of the young people who reminds me why I do the work that I do. And no matter how challenging, how taxing, on those days when I just want to say, I'm ready to give up, you know, like he reminds me, no, Yasmin, you know, you have to keep going, because there's another Durante out there. There's another Autumn out there. There's another Raina out there. There's, you know, like there are more young people that need scholarship support, even more than we can support at this time. Like we get a lot of out of state requests for scholarship support, and it breaks my heart every time. Matter of fact, we're starting to get requests from other countries. That's how great the need is, you know?
Yeah, that's so powerful. And it's the story about Durante says so much. And I think there's a lot to unpack there, where it challenges like a lot of stereotypes that people have. Like immediately when you said Durante's father is the one that reached out, my initial reaction was like, wow. But you know, we have to remember that like these are all people, right? And just like I'm sure there are experiences where people's parents are not in the picture or not engaged in their life and not advocating for them, that, you know, whether they are in incarcerated or not, you know, there are also situations where people are incarcerated, are like negatively impacted by the system and really beat down by it, and yet still willing to fight for their kids and what they need and what they want. And then on the flip side, it's like, look at how powerful it is when we open the door really just a little bit, you know, and you know, that might come in the form of scholarships, which means so much. But when we open that door, like, wow, look what could happen and come out of that for people. And, you know, you mentioned you're only able to fill the need so much, but I'm excited to see the day when you're able to fill all of that need in that dream world, because we know there's a lot of need there. But yes. I want to ask like just one quick question, and then like really want to ask you for your advice. But first I want to ask just about your life. I know that you have, you know, you've published a number of things and you have a lot out there that you've worked on and that you're working on. But I ask this question to everybody. If your life were a book or documentary, what do you think the title would be, Yasmin, and why?
I laugh because I actually had created I kind of jumped ahead of myself, and I created a cover for a book that is not published. I'm not even writing it at this moment. But if my life were a book, I think it would be called something like On the Rough Side of the Mountain. And that is a reference to a gospel song, and it has a lot of different meanings, but I mean, that would be the main title. And of course there'd be like a subtitle, you know, maybe about a millennial's journey to whatever, you know, whatever. I don't know what the subtitle would be.
Right.
But yeah. On the Rough Side of the Mountain, which I think is a story of my life. It's about, you know, I think if I could sum up my life, it's been lots of barriers and challenges in every stage of my life that I've had to navigate, to maneuver, and to overcome. And at every stage and phase of my life, you know, I believe that God has sent me people who have served different purposes and in different seasons of my life, you know, whether it was to be a mentor or to you know, bless me with a financial gift, or you know, to give me kindness, or whatever it was, you know, each stage and phase of my life, I've also had with those challenges. Not only have I been resilient and persistent and have proven to myself, and I feel like to the world, even though they say, you know, you have nothing to prove, but I've proven to myself and to others that I'm capable, that I'm intelligent, that nothing can stop me as long as I'm living, I think that's what it would be.
Yeah, and it's powerful. It's powerful to hear that. And I mean, if there really, I only have one more question. Just but before getting to that final question, could you just share where people could learn more about scholarships and even more about all of what you're up to?
Yes, most definitely, Matt. Thank you for that. I encourage you, if you're listening and you want to learn more about scholarships, please visit us at our website at scholarships. That's with a C as in cookie, C-H-I-P-S as in Sam, fund, F-U-N-D.org. Again, that's scholarshipsfund.org. And you can also find us on various social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, all at scholarships. Instagram is scholarshipsfund.dc. And in terms of me, you know, I must, in all transparency, my website, my personal website needs a reboot, and I'm working with a website developer now. But my personal website is yasminearrington.com, and you can find me also on the all of those social media platforms: Instagram, Yazzie Speaks 2.0, Twitter, Yazzie Speaks. Facebook, Yasmin Arrington, LinkedIn, Yasmin Arrington.
Ooh, well, thank you so much. And I'm excited. I feel like I know that there's so much more if we just sat here that we could dive into.
Oh yeah, we could talk for hours.
We could go. I mean, because this is interviewing you, but if we were just having a conversation here, this would literally be hours. But
absolutely. We would have to have coffee and a meal and everything.
Yeah, no, we need lots of water. I finished my cup of water already. So I want to just ask one last question to close us out, which is, do you have a piece of advice for anyone who's listening who wants to be a change maker and wants to make an impact in the world?
Absolutely. I love that question, Matt. If you want to be a change maker in the world, my advice is, one, realize and know and believe that you can and that you will make a difference. You have to, I believe, change makers have to have a very interesting purview and have to be very, sometimes we can be stubborn, but very, you know, adamant and sure that this is what you're going to do. And that you are going to make a change. It's going to happen. Or you are going to be, you know, the start of the domino effect or the snowball effect that ultimately makes positive change. And then three things. And then two, identify the issue, the problem that you want to solve, and you know, come up with your strategy or your idea. Kind of expand on your idea of how you're going to solve it. It's good to come up with, you know, you may or may not want to start an actual organization. You may just want to have an initiative or, create a rally or whatever it is, but, you know, maybe have a mission statement, you know, have a focus, you know what your topic, your subject matter is, and what the solution, how you're going to solve that pain point, what you're bringing to it in terms of solution, and how others can help you. You know, always have your ask, as they say, always have your ask ready. That's not just for people that are raising, you know, angel and VC funds for profits, but it's also just in general, if you're doing anything to help solve a social problem, you should have your ask ready and know what you need, and not be afraid to say it, not be afraid to ask. And then finally, find people in your life, identify people in your life, and it'll change as the seasons change in your life, who you trust, who you believe and know have your best interests at heart, and who are willing to support you, because you're not going to be able to do it alone. I love the sayings, teamwork makes the dream work. And you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to the Yes to Youth podcast. It's been incredible having you on the journey, and I really hope that Yasmin's interview, as well as the other interview conversations that you heard in this series, continue to resonate and help you be a change maker and be the change the world needs to see. This podcast couldn't have happened without LearnServe International and their collaboration. And I specifically want to shout out Emma Strother, who is now having her last week with LearnServe International, moving on to study at Harvard Kennedy School. Congratulations, Emma. So excited that we got to collaborate on this podcast and share your story and the story of so many other incredible, impactful alumni. For anyone who's listening who loved these interviews and wants to see more of them, leave a review of this podcast. Give us 5 stars and even email me at community@lets.care to let me know what you want to see. If you want more of these interview conversations with LearnServe alumni and community members, it could happen. Just let us know and let the LearnServe team know that that is what you're looking for in your podcast feed. But thanks again for listening. If you want to learn more about Let's Care, you could go to www.lets.care. Just released a film available at www.lets.care/film. And like I said earlier, donate to LearnServe International. Go to learn-serve.org/donate for more information on how you could do that. Thanks again for listening, everyone. And until next time, keep impacting.